Yes, hi, hello, and welcome inside a Wednesday edition of the program, Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. Glad you're with us on the program today. Some basketball ahead for you. Pat Bullion from the Pacers Radio Network going to join us. And when we last talked about the Indiana Pacers, which would have been Monday on the program right here, the possibilities for this team over the last couple of weeks was to secure the number six seed in order to, you know, have that confirmed playoff position. You don't have to play in the play-in scenario. Well, if you look at the possibilities for Indiana, they could go as high as four in these standings. Crazy to think about. Pacers have two games left in the regular season, and they are a game ahead of the Philadelphia 76ers. Last night, they got the win, 140-123 over the Toronto Raptors. So we'll break a little bit of that down coming up. Also, Pat Boylan from the Pacers Radio Network here in a little bit as well. Ball State Sports, there was a baseball game canceled, I believe, yesterday today, but they will be in action in Mid-American Conference play coming up this weekend, and a big one. A lot coming ahead for Ball State Baseball. We'll be joined by Rich Maloney, Ball State Baseball coach, coming up on tomorrow's show because, look, these last 2 weeks have been gigantic for Ball State Baseball, so we'll get to that as well. We'll be talking a little bit about the Masters because that occurs starting tomorrow, but I was wondering something. So today is the par 3 contest at the Masters. Okay. As of 20-30 minutes ago, there were four hole-in-ones today at the par 3 contest. Now, every single year when this contest occurs, you typically get one, maybe two. Four is downright ridiculous. Now, there's no preview as far as what this means of ease of the course or anything along those lines. But I just wondered, what's the most hole-in-ones that have been made in the par 3 contest in Masters history? I think that's pretty impressive because it's not like the players are getting any aids or this is, you know, fixed in any form or fashion. That's impressive. And it's not exactly the players you would expect to get hole-in-ones, not the marquee names in that regard. But the Masters is a bucket list item for me. It always has been, always will be. I'll tell you this. From a viewing standpoint of sports, and maybe I've gone to the wrong tournaments, had the wrong access or whatever, I think golf is one of the toughest sports to really get a great look at the action on the field. You know, typically you're in a stadium or in an arena, and even if you're up very, very high, you can still kind of see. Speaking of places that you can't really see a great game at, you know, I hate to keep dogging on the NCAA because we did it yesterday with the transfer portal. We did. We talked about how the NCAA has control of this thing and they're just kind of letting it ride, letting it do its thing and not really taking control of it any other way. But did you guys see some of the vantage points that fans had at the Final Four this year? It is not abnormal, and I get it. I understand that you want to pack as many people into an arena as you possibly can. So, when you get to the national championship game and the Final Four for college basketball, you are converting a football stadium most oftentimes to a basketball stadium. So, these arenas, these venues are not conducive for basketball viewing, but that really doesn't matter to the NCAA because they're just trying to get the most butts and seats they possibly can. But I even saw people that I knew from the state of Indiana that went to watch Purdue and looked at some of their vantage points. A, I wouldn't want to know what they paid. B, if I'm paying a premium price to get in the building to watch those games, I better have a decent vantage point. But again, if you're a Purdue fan, I guess it really didn't matter to you. You just wanted to be in the venue, in the arena, in the facility, so you can say you experienced it rather than watching it on television. I fully understand that. I get that. I really, really do. But if you look at the way that they converted the football stadium to basketball viewing. Student sections weren't affected. Fans, right, you know, in the first couple of rows weren't affected. But when you got up to the second and third levels, that's where it was really, I mean, you were far back. And I believe, was it in Glendale? I don't know if this is the Arizona Cardinals stadium. I'm pretty sure it is. I don't know if 100% sure. But again, you know, I get maximizing revenue and maximizing the amount of people in a venue, and maybe those fan bases don't care. But that'd be a tough watch based on some of the vantage points that at least I saw on social media. Anyway, I think golf is one of the toughest sports to really, really see everything. Like, I remember when the BMW Championships were at Crooked Stick in Carmel twice. I went in 2012, and I believe was it 2016 the last time it was there. So it was in, you know, twice in a four-year span. And I remember going and trying to cover the events, and just because I wanted to be a part of it. You know, I would have been better off sitting in the media center watching the feed and getting all the real-time statistics rather than being on the course, because it's one of two ways that you can do it, okay? You either sit at one location, so like the 16th hole or the 18th green or whatever the case may be, and you sit there all day long and let every player go by, or you can lock on to one group and just follow them, you know, from hole one all the way through the rest. It's impossible to see everything. And that's what, you know, I guess there's that nuance to golf. And that's where I think Augusta National would be totally different, because from the descriptions of it, you can see everything in a very small circle because of the way that Augusta National is very, very compact. But it's one of those bucket list items. Actually, I was talking to a couple of friends this morning about bucket list items, and from a sports perspective, Augusta National is kind of the last one for me. Fenway was always one of those. Going to the NCAA tournament was one of those. You know, I could have Super Bowl on my list, and it probably will never happen, but I guess that would be a bucket list item, if you will. Although, I like being at home and having the Super Bowl party and having friends over and making it a spectacle, because really, if you're not interested in sports, you're still interested in the Super Bowl because of the entertainment value that it creates. But the Masters is one of those where being on the grounds, being there makes sense. But I truly think golf is one of the toughest sports when you're there in person to actually see everything. And, you know, if you're in an NFL game, you can see everything. And if you're high up or down low, same with baseball, basketball, pretty much every other sport, it's hard. You know, I guess golf and racing would be most conducive to this. But if you're at the Indianapolis 500, the car's coming back around in 40 seconds. You don't have to see how they navigate turn number two or turn number three or whatever the case may be. So I truly think golf has – that's the tough part about golf, yet people attend golf tournaments anyway. Back in 2016, I went to cover the BMW Championships, as I mentioned, and I remember after a couple of holes, I said, you know what? I went and I left and found a place where I could watch the feed, because that was a better vantage point to cover the events than not. But I think Augusta National would be that once in a kind of unique circumstance bucket list item there. But anyway, the Masters going to tee off tomorrow. I'm not even sure how we got to that tangent on the show today, but we figured it out. I don't know. I was talking about bucket list items this morning in sports, and Augusta National came up. Okay, Pat Boyle and Pacers Radio Network will stop by coming up here in about 15 minutes or so. So, scenario is this. Indiana won last night 140 to 123. They're winners of five out of their last six games. Huge, because the teams around them, you know, you beat Miami on Sunday. Miami has now lost a couple in a row, so you now have a 1.5 game lead on the Miami Heat, which is huge. Philadelphia, on the other hand, is starting to make a little bit of a surge, so you're not out of the woods yet of locking down that number six seed. However, you can go a long way in doing that tomorrow night as you face off against the Cleveland Cavaliers. Now, it's kind of hard to mention this, but you have an immense opportunity to not just get the sixth seed, but to elevate your position up to the fifth or even fourth seed, believe it or not. It's kind of wild how it's transpired here, but last night, Indiana got 30 from Tyrese Halliburton and blasted the Toronto Raptors in the second and third quarters. Pacers trailed by 10 after the first quarter. Between the second and third quarters, the Pacers were plus 25 in the game. They scored 40 in the second quarter, 41 in the third quarter, and 34 in the fourth quarter. I mean, dominant performance in the second through fourth quarters. Now, you'd like to start a little quicker, and that was the conversation after the game, that Indiana wasn't exactly pleased with the way they began the game. But certainly, you wouldn't have any issues with the way they closed the game. That's what you want when you get to this time of the year. Pacers got 30 from Halliburton. Overall, six players in double figures. Obi Toppin went off. He had 23 points, 10 for 14 off the bench, and was fantastic. Indiana out-rebounded Toronto, certainly outshot them from the perimeter. Look at this discrepancy. Pacers hit 16 threes to the five of the Toronto Raptors, and, you know, as typical, the Pacers had five different players hit multiple threes in the game. That's pretty lethal, led by, obviously, Tyrese Halliburton's 30 points and five assists and five boards. Now, the scenario is this. Pacers have two games left. They have the Cleveland Cavaliers coming up tomorrow. That is on the road. Then they come home on Saturday to finish out the regular season against the Atlanta Hawks. That's a 1 o'clock tip-off. Now, the curiosity is, are you going to wrap up a playoff position by the time Saturday comes? Because you have two games left in the regular season. Now, if you win tonight against Cleveland, I think that that would lock up at least a playoff position seed. So you'll definitely be there. But the fact of the matter is this: because Cleveland's 3-7 in their last 10, Orlando's 5-5 in their last 10 games as well. Pacers are 7-3. Things have gotten a little interesting. There is an outside chance for the Indiana Pacers to get the fourth overall seed in the Eastern Conference and get home court advantage in the first round. That is out there as an opportunity. Cleveland has two games left, or three games left. Orlando has three games left. Pacers have two. So you have a little bit of an opportunity here. Philadelphia, who's behind Indiana, has two games left as well. Pacers have a one-game lead on Philadelphia. Philadelphia, again, at 45-35. Pacers at 46-34. So it puts a lot of emphasis on tonight, and obviously it means a lot for Cleveland, and it means a lot for Indiana, because things are so tight between the fourth and seventh seeds right now. You're only separated by a game and a half in that respect. Now, it feels as though Cleveland is going to get a top six seed, Orlando the same thing, but there's an outside chance that it's not. Pacers are a half game back of Cleveland, half game back of Orlando, and the opportunity is there. It absolutely is. There's an outside chance at the Pacers getting the three seed. I doubt that happens, but it's there, I guess. So, you know, the opportunity is right in front of you. So the long story short is this. Man, is it important these next two games. Atlanta is a team that already clinched a play-in berth. I guess they can improve their position up to nine, so they have something to play for as well. Cleveland has a lot to play for. But I'll be curious to talk this through with Pat Boylan for the Pacers Radio Network because, you know, you've had good success against Cleveland this year. But both teams have a lot to play for. And what has shifted in the Pacers' play style? Now, if you're just kind of getting used to this basketball team and going to start to get to know them even a little bit more as we head to the playoffs, here's what they are. They are an elite offensive team. And even without Benedict Mathurin, even after trading Buddy Hield and the addition of Pascal Siakam, look, Pascal Siakam's been very, very steady. But what I've liked about this basketball team from the start to now is it feels like every game they're getting six guys in double figures, 5 to 6 to 7 guys in double figures. Normally led in scoring by Haliburton or Siakam, but every once in a while Miles Turner gets loose. You know, every once in a while Aaron Nesmith does the same thing. And the bench is playing pretty marquee moments. And a name to watch is Ben Shepherd. Ben Shepherd's a player first half of the season. He was a late first-round draft pick for the Indiana Pacers this past year. And now he's a rotational piece. He barely played in the first half of the season. Now he is, and even in important games down the stretch last night, he had 11 points, couple steals, couple of assists. He has kind of replaced the Buddy Hield role after Buddy Hield was traded to Philadelphia. It's amazing how the Pacers have evolved their rotation, and also the fact that Shepherd is getting more minutes than a top 10 draft pick in Jairus Walker. Now, you have a lot of different forwards in Siakam and Nesmith and Turner and Toppin and Jalen Smith, etc., Isaiah Jackson. So it's a little bit more heavy in the middle, but it also shows you just how much Ben Shepherd has evolved throughout the year. So he's going to be a big piece in the postseason. But this is a deep, elite offensive team, one of the best in the NBA. Maybe from a point standpoint, they ultimately will be the best at the end of the regular season. But it's going to come down to how they defend when they hit the postseason play. I mean, we've been talking about it from the very start of the year to this point, but again, you could score a bunch of points, but the style of the playoffs changes. I doubt the Pacers are going to average 120 points in the postseason. If they do, they're going to do awfully well. But the possessions become fewer. You're working more in the half court. You're not running as much as you might be in the regular season. We see this in postseason play, and obviously it's been several years since the Pacers have experienced postseason play. So this is kind of a refresher to Pacers fans, because this hasn't happened in a while. But, you know, we're not done talking about the regular season because of how important really the next 3 or 4 days are for the Indiana Pacers. And there is an opportunity for them to host a first-round playoff series, but we'll see. The most important thing for this basketball team is staying out of the play-in scenario. And it feels like at this point, as long as they win one of their final two games, they'll at least do that. If they win both of their final couple games, we could be talking about a first-round playoff series hosting. Could be interesting to see how all that plays out. So Pat Boylan from the Pacers Radio Network is going to come up here in a little bit, and we'll talk all about that. Thanks to those of you joining us on Facebook Live. Now, a bit of an announcement. We're excited about this. The show's heading on the road again. And what I mean by that is very excited to be back this summer at the 1925 Pump House at the Courtyard. Yes, the patio shows are back. Our first projected date is at the end of April. And just like we've done before, we're going to have a different guest every single Friday heading through the summer all the way up till August. And then high school football will begin, and we'll be back to our normal activities on this program. But I'm excited about this. And I want to thank our friends at the 1925 Pump House of the Courtyard, because it's been a lot of fun. We've done it for a couple of years now, our third straight year doing this. And it's so much fun to have a coach or an active sports community member and just sit down and have a long-form conversation with them, a very relaxed, just asking questions. And you know what? We learn a lot. And oftentimes, those conversations are different than the normal interviews we have with, you know, when we have a coach on and talk about a result or talk about what's coming up. And, you know, when you're in the summer, a lot of those sports are in their off-season, per se, and you get to ask a lot of questions about, hey, what happened the previous year, what's coming up this year, and, you know, philosophically where they stand on certain things. And, you know, last year I remember we were talking NIL, we were talking transfer portal, we were talking about all those things. I remember when we had Coach Mike New out at the Pump House last year, we were talking about a two-quarterback system way back in, like, June, way before the season even began, and it was kind of fun. It's really fun to have those conversations, and I'm glad we're going to have the opportunity to do the exact same thing this upcoming year. So, again, thanks to our friends at the 1925 Pump House of the Courtyard, and more details to come on this. Our first show is at the end of April, and we'll give you all the details where, if you'd like to, you can join us and hang out with us every single Friday throughout the summer at the 1925 Pump House at the Courtyard. So looking forward to everything surrounding that program coming up in the summer. All right, when we come back, we're going to have Pat Boylan from the Pacers Radio Network. He joins us after this. This is the Power Talk on CWMUN. Welcome back in. Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN, is always presented by Walls Furniture and Mattress, Nebo Road, right here in Muncie, and online at wallsfurniture.com. 90% of what's on the showroom floor in stock for you, 48 hours or less. That's the Walls Furniture and Mattress difference. And by the way, it's Once New Wednesday. Something new every single Wednesday at Walls Furniture and Mattress. You can check them out online, Facebook, or go in store at Nebo Road in Muncie. Or online again, wallsfurniture.com, as we're glad to be joined by Pat Boylan from the Pacers Radio Network. We're heading to the end of the regular season, but we can't focus on the postseason just yet, Pat, because these next two games are gigantic. Now, the last 10 Pacers have won 7 of 10, and, you know, we've been focusing so much on the 6-7 line of 6, you're in the playoffs, 7, you're the first seed in the play-in tournament. Well, now you can even look further than that, because these next two games, you could climb as high as 4 from the way it looks. So the way this is shaken out, how do you look at these next two games for Indiana?
Well, yeah, I think you described it pretty accurately. They're massively important, although what you've been able to do over the weekend and then on Tuesday has put you on an inside track in an area where you control your own destiny for a pretty darn good playoff spot. This is just a personal preference type thing. I still have most of my focus on finishing above that 7 line. Unfortunately, the Pacers have gotten no help from anyone else around the league, despite themselves in beating Miami. The Heat have been winning a lot recently, and the Sixers have been on quite a tear. So I think had they gotten just a little luck, they might have already locked that spot down. But they're close. With one more win in their next two games, they 99.98% chance lock up a top 6 spot. There is one crazy scenario where there's a 3-way tiebreaker that's very unlikely to happen, but still out there and could affect whether or not you technically are called clinched or not. Without getting into too many details, if the Pacers, the Heat, and the Magic end up in a 3-way tie for 6th, which means Philadelphia is past you, then the Pacers actually don't do so well in that three-team tiebreak. But for all intents and purposes, win should get you to the top 6. And then from there, your path is really wide open. The Cavaliers game, from that perspective, is going to be really, really significant, because if the Pacers win on Friday in Cleveland, then all of a sudden you're in a scenario where you're into the 4-5 game, and getting home court advantage in the first round is not hard to imagine at all. In fact, there's this site that I use that allows you to put a bunch of permutations in, and it kind of spits out what would happen if these things happen. And from the Pacers' perspective, if they finish 2-0 here, this site that I'm looking at says you've got an 83% chance of having home court advantage in the first round, which is would be quite a shock, I think, for most people that have just been focused on finishing in the top six. If things go wrong, you could very well be in the play-in tournament. If things go right, you might be the three seed. It's just wild how close all of this is right now. So this game tonight, Miami plays tonight, hosting Dallas. The Pacers would love to get a little help there. If Dallas were to win, then that would officially eliminate Miami from passing the Pacers, and it would lock up at least a top seven spot, and that ridiculous scenario I was running through with you a moment ago would become moot. But there's so many permutations right now. The exciting thing is everything is so tightly compact. The only hard part is it's really tough to describe everything you should be looking for because there's just so many avenues and so many different ways this thing could go.
Yeah, it's wild. Last night, in the game that they took control of in the second, third, and fourth quarters, a lot of focus on the start, but the way that they were able to adjust in the second quarter, I know there was, at this point of the year, wins are great, and you still got to get wins, obviously, to secure your position, but it felt like the conversation after the fact was more about we got to start better, not because it's the regular season anymore, it's the postseason. Like, everything seems to be so focused on we got to fix this because we got to be our best in the postseason. Do you feel that around the team right now, Pat?
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate. And to the team's credit, they had just a terrific start against Miami, and it was a little bit of a flip type of scenario where the Pacers got up a double digit lead real quick, and they got up by 22 in the first half. The second half wasn't their greatest half in the world, but they had built such a cushion that it was okay with it not being the greatest second half in the world. And that game against Miami is going to be the most important game the Pacers will play all year, so it was really significant to win it. Had they lost it, Indiana would be holding on to seventh for dear life with Philadelphia tied with them, and the Pacers only ahead by tiebreak. And here we are talking about the potential for home court advantage in the first round. That's how massive that game is and could end up being. But from the Pacers' perspective here, they've put themselves in a really good spot, and so continuing to win is what's most important. They got off to a poor start against Toronto. And if you would say, what are maybe three things that have affected the Pacers the most this year? Well, you'd say they've struggled with teams that they should beat. They're not beating them at the clip they'd like. They've struggled with sustaining success when you have some big wins, keeping them coming and not having that letdown. And they struggled with slow starts. And so you go into the Toronto game and you're playing a poor team, and it's after sustaining some success, and then you have a slow start. I mean, it was all of their worst enemies kind of combined into one after the first quarter on Tuesday. And so it's not to say they've solved any of those issues, but a massive second, a massive third quarter, just a huge emphatic response. And the Pacers went from, oh no, are we going to do this again? Maybe some of the fans thinking that, to, the game was in hand by the time we started the fourth quarter. So all in all, a nice performance, a much needed win on Tuesday, and it sets up a really important one Friday in Cleveland.
It's Pat Bloom from the Pacers Radio Network with us, Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMU. And I want to go back to Sunday, and I found it very, very interesting down the stretch because, as we know, the style changes when it comes to the postseason. It just does, not drastically, but certainly puts a lot on, your individual star. Now, Tyrese Haliburton and the way he operates isn't the typical star, right? He's not a put it up 25, 30 time type of guy, because a lot of what makes him great is getting others involved. Now, down the stretch of that basketball game, he seemed to be a willing passer to give it up to others. Aaron Nesmith made a play, Miles Turner made a play, those sorts of things. What do you expect? And it's hard to tell because we're not at that point yet, but it feels like right now we're playing, the Pacers are playing playoff basketball. What would you expect the way that Tyrese Haliburton takes it upon himself a little bit more, or is what we're seeing now what you could expect from the way the Pacers stylistically adapt to the playoffs?
It's a good question, and it's a little bit of a cop-out answer, but, I just honestly don't know, and for numerous reasons. One, the guy's never played in the play-in tournament before in his life, let alone the playoffs. And two, we've seen just so many different versions of Halliburton here lately. We've seen a stretch of play that he's had where he's looked very much like the November, December pre-injury version of himself, where he was scoring 25 points and putting up 12 assists per game. We've seen some games like Tuesday where he put up a big number. He had 30 points. The assists weren't through the roof, but he was a scorer when the Pacers needed them to be. And needed him to be. And then, you know, over the weekend, he didn't put up, as you were noting, gaudy offensive numbers. In fact, if you would have said, you know, he's going to shoot, I think this is correct, 3-for-8 one game and 3-for-10 the other game, you might go, uh-oh, is this weekend going to be a positive one or not? And they win both of those games despite it. His assist numbers were right where they normally would be. And so I think some of this is just we've seen a little bit more of an inconsistent version of him. But in general, he's trending absolutely in the right direction. And the Pacers are going to need him, I think, to make any serious noise. They're going to need him to be close to that November, December version of himself. And one thing that I think could really, really help with that is, I mean, think about it. You know, he played Team USA basketball, and then not too long after that, the World Cup, he's in training camp, and then everything that November and December brought, including an extra game thrown in there for the in-season tournament championship. And then, oh, we get to All-Star weekend, and instead of breaking like a lot of guys do, you know, he's the host of the whole event. And so he never really stops for All-Star weekend. He's also got the injury in there. What I'm getting at is the guy hasn't had much time to exhale. And if you can lock up a top six spot because of the play-in tournament now, those teams that are in the top six get 5 or so days off. And I think that's as big of a key for him as anything. When he's had a couple days rest is when he's tended to shine the most. So I think that goal of being top six is obvious for the obvious reasons, but I also think getting him the type of rest that could be impactful could be really key, because at the end of the day, I think they need both versions of him. I think they need the version that's capable of putting up 25, 30 points a game and is hunting his shot like he was earlier in the year, but also can put up 10 assists per game and make everything else and everybody else work around him. And it's a lot to ask, but he's shown he can do it. And so what version the Pacers get of Halliburton in their hopeful playoff series, I think, is probably the most significant storyline from Indiana's perspective once we get there.
And I think, as we've talked about throughout the season, defensively getting into that top, you know, 18, top 15 range has always been something very, very important. But what's going to be a better case scenario, regardless of what level of postseason play this team plays? Having Pascal Siakam and Tyrese Halliburton be in the 20s to 25s per game, or getting what we've seen a lot here over the last week, you know, six different players in double figures, Pat?
There's an interesting statistic, and I'll see if I can track it down while we're talking here, about the Pacers and their winning percentage. When they get six guys into double figures, it's terrific. And I think that still is an important dynamic for this team. Here we go. When the Pacers have six plus in double figures this year, they're 41-13. So that gives you an idea of just how important getting all those guys involved is. And I do think that's very important. You know, that's winning at a clip of like 760 throughout the course of the season when that's happened. So the Pacers do that and they win. However, playoffs are a different beast. You don't go as deep into your rotation. The starters play more minutes, and we all know at the end of the day, it's the stars that tend to tip the scales on the series. So I absolutely think the general style of play, which gets everyone involved, is very important. But at the end of the day, the Pacers have two bona fide stars, Tyrese Halliburton, Pascal Siakam. I don't know that they necessarily need to be within a certain number range in terms of scoring, but for the Pacers to win a series, or for the Pacers to maybe even make a surprise run here, there's no doubt in my mind for that to happen. Halliburton and Siakam have to be close to, if not the best version of themselves. So if I had to pick one of those things, I'm always going to pick the stars looking and playing like stars. But your point about the depth is very, very good, and it's bared fruit during the season. When the Pacers have had success this year, it's almost always because they've gotten a ton of guys involved, and I think that still needs to happen in the playoffs too.
Well, and from a rotation standpoint, that's where I was going to go next, Pat. I think we're very clear that T.J. McConnell is going to be a big part of what you do, but you've got a lot more depth with the Obi Toppins, the Jalen Smiths, the Isaiah Jacksons in the front court. Does that mean in the postseason, and we've seen him continue to grow in his role and grow in the confidence within the system, that Ben Shepherd might be the second guard off the bench in the postseason for this team right now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, postseason rotation is going to be a fascinating discussion because the Pacers in a lot of ways have won with their depth. And do they just say, okay, that's the horse that got us here. Let's continue going nine deep. And then maybe just the second unit plays a little less because you want to give your stars and your best players as much playing time as possible. But the bench has been so important. I do think Ben Shepherd has a role on this team. I think he's solidified one, and I think he'll have one in the playoffs. So I would be surprised if you didn't see him out there. I think he's somebody, and this is a tough ask as a rookie and a late first round draft pick. I think he's going to have to continue to show that he can knock down that 3-point shot. It's been at times really good this year. At times he's gone through some slumps this year, but he's a good defender. And because of that, I think he will have a spot and he'll have a role. And it'll just be interesting how Rick Carlisle does these rotations. You know, he can always use Andrew Nembhard, who's kind of starting at the off guard spot. He can always use him as a backup point guard if he wants. But we've all seen what T.J. McConnell has done here lately and how important he's been. So the Pacers kind of have 3-point guards at their disposal that they can use. And I think how Rick Carlisle chooses to use his rotations will be a fascinating discussion, because even without Benedict Mathurin, I mean, you can make a case for 10 or 11 guys getting out there, including if you get down early and you need some shooting. We know Doug McDermott is more than capable. So that playoff rotation, I think, will be one of the more interesting topics of a playoff series that happens. I do think one thing you'll probably definitely is guys like Halliburton, instead of going 32, 34 minutes, they might be going something like 36, 38. And to do that, you've got to trim away some from the bench. But that doesn't mean those guys don't have a role, and doesn't mean they won't play. And specifically to Ben Shepherd, I think he's proven to be an important part in this. And as you look at the Pacers' defensive improvement, you know, it's kind of coincided with not only his play and his insertion into the rotation, but also kind of this switch to make Andrew Nembhard an off guard and to start this group that they have. The Pacers have improved defensively because they have more defensive-minded players in the rotation, and I don't think that changes when you come to playoff time either.
All right, finally, Cleveland tomorrow. We talked about the importance of this game at the beginning of our conversation here. In the previous matchups and what this one means, how much can you take from the previous matchups to one in this case for both teams means a lot here for the next week?
Yeah, it's so hard to judge previous matchups because the Cavaliers have been so banged up this year. You've gotten a bunch of different versions of them. You played them in was it game two? You played them real, real early in the year, and then you beat them in November in the in-season tournament. And then you had them recently without Donovan Mitchell, and that was the one you lost. But the fifth spot is on the line, and tiebreaker is on the line. And just to give you an idea of what this playoff status site says, they say if the Pacers beat Cleveland, they've got a 42% chance at being the 4 seed, an 18% chance of being the 3 seed. So even that right there, you win and you've got a 60% chance of being in the top four. And if you lose, your chances of being in the top four are about 1%. So it's a huge one. I still think Miami's the biggest game of the year, because to me, 6 versus 7, being 6 instead of 7 is more valuable than being in this type of playoff situation, 4 versus 5 or 6. But you can make a case it's right up there. Donovan Mitchell hasn't been playing lately. I think I saw he was questionable in their last game but did not play. So his status is going to be massive. It's going to be in Cleveland. They've got a ton to play for. So make no mistake, this is going to be a really, really tough one. The Pacers are going to kind of be in the position Miami was last weekend of playing on the road in a playoff-like regular season game. But we'll see if they're up to the task. And if not, Atlanta on Sunday is one that the Pacers are absolutely going to feel like they should win. And it's possible the Hawks are locked into 10 and sitting guys too.
It's Pat Boylan from the Pacers Radio Network. A huge 3 or 4 days for the Indiana Pacers and the NBA as a whole. Lots to cover, Pat, and the crew will have it on the radio network. Hey, thanks, my friend. We'll talk to you soon, and actually next week be talking about a big day Monday for the Indiana Fever. But Pacers first, we'll talk about that next week. Thanks. Have a good week.
Yeah, Mark, thank you.
That's Pat Boylan with us. We're back with you next. Power Talk among CWMUN. Yes, welcome back inside the program. Final time of this Wednesday, brought to you in part by State Farm agent Jason May. Make sure you're getting all the discounts you deserve by calling Jason at 747-7100 today. Glad you're with us on the show as always. We had a slight mention at the end of that conversation with Pat Boylan from the Pacers Radio Network, but Monday is the WNBA draft. 7:30 is the beginning time for that. And, of course, as many might know already, the Indiana Fever have the number one overall draft pick. And Caitlin Clark is the prize. There's no doubt about it. You know, overall, this draft is supposed to be transformational, not just with the number one pick, but all the way down in the top 10. Names on names on names of very accomplished women's basketball players in college basketball. But get this. Saw this today. This is from James Boyd on The Athletic. Many others had this as well. The Indiana Fever are going to have, and there's 40 regular season games in the WNBA. 36 of those are scheduled to be on national television this upcoming season for the Indiana Fever. Now, if you were to ask how many games they had that were televised nationally last year, the number would be one. One. That's it. So last year, one of their total of 40 games last year was on national television. This upcoming season, they're already scheduled for 36 out of those 40 games. Now, if that doesn't speak to you on the Caitlin Clark effect, I'm not sure what else would. That is an incredible, incredible number. Look, WNBA teams are preparing for this. I mean, they're already kind of booking other bigger venues when Caitlin Clark comes to town, and she presumably is going to be the number one overall draft pick of the Indiana Fever. Like, you're drafting the player, but you're also drafting a brand, and that's going to be something special on Monday. We'll talk about it, and when we have Pat on next week, we'll talk a little bit more about it. Again, he can't really comment on it specifically until next week occurs, but obviously, that organization is to just be excited because the attention and all the things that come with it, it's going to be a lot of fun to have that as a part of everything. I believe the Indiana Fever have already sold out season tickets as well. I don't know what the number was from previous seasons, but goodness gracious, it is quite an opportunity for the Indiana Fever coming up here in these next several seasons. So we'll talk more about that coming up. Tomorrow, Rich Maloney, Ball State baseball coach, is going to stop by the program as we talk about what has been the last couple of weeks. Ball State's been very good in Mid-American Conference play, and some of these series coming up are pivotal for not just their overall record, but certainly what could possibly be a run to the top of the Mid-American Conference standings. The point of the matter is this: there is a long way to go, and while others might have been concerned early on, no concerns now because Ball State's right in the thick of things in the middle of the Mid-American Conference conference schedule, and certainly some key series coming forward. So Ball State baseball coach Rich Maloney on the program coming up at 4:30 tomorrow. Looking forward to that conversation right there. So big thanks to Pat Boylan from the Pacers Radio Network. Next 4 days, huge for Indiana. We'll preview it all and talk about it all as we go through the playoff run. We're back with you tomorrow at 4. Have a good evening.